I would like to have one.
Oh, okay.
I just thought that maybe everybody else was going to be wanting that. Since I had had one recently, I was going to get a...
Oh, well, I mean, I'm going to do as many as I can.
Oh, okay. Well, certainly I'd love one.
Okay, well, I didn't want to, you know, reveal anything in open forum that anyone did not want revealed.
Sure.
Yes, indeed. You're off. You're off. You're off. Right. Is Karen here, or get her? I guess other people don't have their clocks adjusted.
I've had to notice that I have to reset my computer clock every week.
Is it
falls behind about 4 or 5 minutes every week.
Well, now that's sort of what I'm noticing.
It doesn't happen to my watch, but it happens to the computer.
Well, and apparently it also happens to my battery run clocks, too. But I think you're right. I think my wristwatch doesn't do that.
Jennifer's here.
Hello, Jennifer.
Hi.
Good. And Jennifer, did you want a Celtic Cross reading? I hadn't heard from you. Of course, you don't email anyway, but... Would you like a Celtic Cross reading?
Sure.
Okay.
What is a Celtic Cross reading?
It's a tarot reading.
Uh-huh.
It's what we'll be studying a week from today. So I wanted to give people examples in class of them. So you all, because you all will be doing them yourselves, you see. On anything that you can, on anybody that you can.
Mm-hmm.
Partners, mates, servants, bosses, whatever's.
Do you need permission to do them?
Not really, but if because I'll be talking about them in class, I thought that they would be better to ask permission, don't you see?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Rather than, I mean, because if you're just giving a reading, or if you're doing a reading on someone and they're not even there, you don't need permission.
Okay.
If you're doing a reading on someone that is there, it would be sort of make sense to ask permission because they do the shuffling. So they've got to sort of agree to participate. But in this, and that's generally like a one-on-one, but... You know, if someone came for a reading and they had other people with them, I would always clear that that was okay with them.
Okay.
You know, because you don't want to be talking about somebody in front of somebody else unless they, you know, were okay with that.
Are there more things to do with the tarot cards than Celtic greetings, or is that the main thing?
No, there's a number of layouts. That's a type of layout, okay?
Oh, okay.
The Celtic Cross. And there's a 12-card layout. Those are the two layouts that we will be primarily using. But we do many things with them, particularly with 12-card. It's a spread that you do.
Okay.
In fact, any time you go on, you know these tarot people on TV... that you see in movies or you see advertising doing readings?
Yeah.
Generally, they use a Celtic cross.
Oh, okay.
Or what we call a short form or modified Celtic cross. They don't do the whole thing because they don't know the whole thing. But you all will learn the entire thing. Anyone else with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Magnus. And I did get your email that you would like a Celtic cross reading.
Yes, sir.
And I thank you for that.
Thank you.
Anyone else with us?
Yeah, hi, it's Helen.
Hey, Helen. And I haven't gotten an email from you, but did you want a Celtic Cross reading?
Oh, yes. I forgot to send the email.
Okay. Well, you don't have to. I'm marking it down now because
okay.
I have to do them early part of this week, so I can send them out to you guys so you can follow along and such.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah. And Randy, are you with us? Oh, is she at? Okay. Are you all ready to bless?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Okay. Child of wonder.
Child of flame.
Nurse our spirit.
Protect
our hand. So, Dan, you were first. What kind of things did you notice when you greet with clarity? And did you have a chance to ask for any what we call blessings or favors and give any thanks and so forth?
What I noticed was that it was like when I would say that, I would pop into present time just real strong and real vivid.
That's wonderful.
And I did ask for something, and it didn't materialize.
It did not.
No, it was a weather-related thing.
I see. So you okay. Tell me what you asked, if you don't mind.
Well, I was going to move my sailboat to a different marina.
Okay.
And so I asked for fair weather and fair winds. And
okay.
I got strong winds and cloudy weather.
Okay. And you asked all the directions?
I asked, yes, all directions and
okay.
Father Sky and Earth Mother. I didn't leave anybody out.
That's wonderful. I'm so glad you did that. And you probably haven't a clue as to what happened, do you?
Other than it didn't seem to work, no, I'm clueless.
Okay. But you have no understanding as to what caused it not to work.
No, I don't.
See, I you couldn't have done a better operation if you had tried. Because this brings up the whole issue of what happens when we go to, say, the wrong administrators for help.
Okay.
Because that's a very useful request. However, in my experience, because I've done that a lot, you have to deal only with the winds that are in charge in your given area.
And is that the prevailing wind?
That is right.
Okay.
So if you would have done that principally with winds of the west, I believe that would be your prevailing wind?
Depends on what time of the year we've got. It's either south winds or north winds here.
North or south?
Yeah, and at this time of the year, it's switching over to north winds.
Okay, then I would have perhaps either spoken to both of them or principally to the north, and particularly if that wind came from the north. And that will generally work, but when you take an issue like that, if it's a personal issue, like something you want just for you, clarification for you, going to all the directions is just fine. However, if it's a outer world phenomena you want, generally if you put it out to everyone, you get nothing. And that's really useful for you to see that because, and then to try it again on another time more specifically, because it brings up the issue that a lot of people wonder about, even though there's a popular song that says all prayers are answered, in our direct experience, oftentimes prayers are not answered, at least very, very directly, and from a shaman's point of view or a magician's point of view, that is because if you don't go to the person in charge, you generally don't get an answer or an effect. You might get an answer, but you don't necessarily get an effect. So since it has sort of become a common practice in our cultures to take everything to the highest being, whatever one calls that, and leave it at that, and then sort of wondering why we don't get very immediate and very personalized response. So cool. Very good. Jennifer, how about you?
I found that I was a lot more in present time the whole week.
So that worked that way for you too?
Yes. It was, I regressed once in a while, but it held pretty much all week.
Good. And did you make any requests in your day greetings and stuff?
On Saturday, I asked to be shown clarity.
Okay.
And I felt really wowed out by everything, that it wasn't quite... things were a lot different than what I've been seeing, and then towards in the afternoon, I had, like, anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I asked for that, so I don't know what I gained off of that, but...
What do you mean that you guess you asked for anxiety?
Well, I asked to be shown clarity, and... What I was shown made things speed up or my heart beat faster or something, so.
In other words, it was a little bit overstimulating?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I've read in a number of places, in a number of systems, that anybody that comes into what they call clear consciousness or consciousness fairly spontaneously often goes unconscious. So that would verify what you're indicating, that depending on the level of the clarity we get, I mean, just going out as you all did with the day, with the exit rituals and so forth, and saying with clarity, I greet you, and being in present time, that's really good. And it's not that it isn't good the way you did it, but it's sort of like if you don't have a particular condition, and even if you do, I mean, if you want clarity on a particular event or issue in your life, or something that's going on in the world, and you ask for that, and it might be overstimulating. Because you see, our belief systems keep us pretty well shut down. And to see the actual cause and effect of something could be, quite vivifying. Quite jolting, even. And so did you thank for that at night?
Yeah.
Good. That's good. So keep trying it. Try it again. You know, see if you can get more precision.
Like for a certain thing?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it might be useful to ask for clarity about a specific thing, or because this coming week we're doing in willingness, it might be good to ask something about that, or something limited a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
No. Do you got an example?
Well, if I just go to all the directions and say I want to have more willingness, that's fairly general.
Yeah.
If I say, help me to be willing around a particular issue where I have been shut down or stubborn?
Okay.
That's more specific. That's the way I would do it.
Okay.
Magnus, how about you?
Everything worked out fine this week. I did the greetings without specific request, but a lot was accomplished. And one of the things that we accomplished was such that it's a long story. There's no way I put it that it will not extend beyond the limit of the class, but it's kind of being saved from something that was to happen, because lately at my job, the requests I've been making, they kind of approve it, so that a lot of time I commute by telephone. But suddenly this week, I was sent out a lot more than usual. And one of the places I was originally scheduled to go, my boss said, no, that's too much for him. Don't ride a willing horse to death. He took it off. The guy who went for that job, who was sent out to that job, got into trouble. That he almost lost his life. After that happened, I was talking to my boss. I said, hey, you extended me so much this week that I couldn't get a lot of things done, and I'm supposed to be working in a different department now that I would telecommute, to get the job done. He was apologizing and said it's because he's short of, people who can take care of it, or he figured I can better take care of it. It was just a help out. I said, thank God, kind of like everything was, the clarity really helped a lot, because I would have been the guy just helping out. I would have been the guy that got into that trouble. So it was, other than that, everything was okay. Things were beyond my, the limit. I placed them, I suppose, but.
So it clarified things for you and for your boss both.
Exactly.
Right. That's good. That's good. That certainly saved you, as you said, a lot of potential hazard.
Exactly.
Good. Thank you. Helen, how about you?
Well, a little bit of an echo here.
We like echoes.
Good. The main impact for the week was also being in the present moment, but it took the form of having gratitude for what I have in the present. It was like any time that I would go to think about something future oriented based on dissatisfaction in the present,
right?
I just, it's almost like I didn't want to go there. It was like getting a voice that would say, okay, if you want more of that life, appreciate the extent to which it is in your life right now.
Right.
Just focus on that. And as a result, I've spent most of today just cleaning out my apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Just appreciating what I have that I want and letting go of what I don't need anymore.
Sure.
So, yeah, it felt pretty good.
So even as you last week put out the question about, priorities and what is significant in your life and so forth, do you see it's already starting to come around? Perhaps first in just your environment itself.
Yeah.
And but it's showing you that when you ask, when you when you have that sense of seeking, that it will come, in particular in what you said, that you avoided past patterns of thought.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see, those past patterns of thought would only bring you the same that you have.
Yeah, and it's almost like they felt, painful is too strong a word, but it was like I could see the link about how they cause pain.
You're right.
And so that was the avoidance. It was like, oh my God, I don't want to go there. And the other thing that happened, I don't know how it's, or if it's related, but I'm open that it might be, was I had a lot of physical pain this week, and I moved out of it, or I got help for it, but it's almost as if structurally there's a change in my musculature, which was putting, like, I had a lot of pressure on my jaw and on my backbone and pelvic area, and I went to this new network chiropractic guy in town, and he hooked me up to this machine, and there were areas that were, like, red was considered severe and black was, like, over the top,
mm-hmm.
and I was registering black in a lot of these areas. And anyway, I had just been watching what I've been eating and how I've been living, and he helped, and it, I guess it was gone by Thursday, so it was hard for about 3 days.
Yeah, it seems like you're getting clarification very quickly to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that's for.
Yeah.
And did you make any requests, any special requests?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. And Randy, have you come in with us?
Oh, yes.
Oh, good. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, last week my phone died on me. Towards the end.
Okay. And I want to ask you, did you want a Celtic cross reading?
Yes.
Okay, good. So everybody does. Okay, go ahead, Randy.
And I missed the special request.
I had talked about that, like, for instance, with in day greetings and day endings. In the morning when you do your day greetings, particularly relative to the reading we're doing, you can go around to each direction and ask for some favor or assistance or help.
Okay.
And then at night you thank for that.
All right.
And you ask the same from each direction. And then, of course, we find out certain things about that are very interesting, like Dan did, that when he asked for a hole in the weather, so to speak, or favorable weather, when he asked all the directions and Sky Father and Earth Mother, he did not get an effect that he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I don't know if you were in.
I heard that, yeah. You
did hear that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is sort of like learning how to pose a question or a request.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. I'll try that this week.
Sure. So what was with clarity like for you?
Well, it was, let's see. Well, physically, I've came down with a cold, so my head was not real clear. Still isn't. But I would say the greetings with clarity, and where I didn't feel it, that those moments that I did have clarity would come up later in the day, a thing, or it would just pop up. I would all of a sudden have clarity on many different things. For example, when Helen, you were talking with Helen about past, the destructiveness of past thoughts or something, I became very clear on that. How I've gotten into a pattern dwelling on past stuff, and how it just I became very clear how useless that is, and how it affects my present moment, and how I'm clear that I can change my thoughts on that, and if I change my thoughts, then I think I can change my present moment.
And your future moment.
Mm.
Because the thoughts that we think now are what are creating our future.
Aha.
And particularly the thoughts and then the feelings that we accompany them with. And you were taught sociologically or societally that you can't change your thoughts, but actually you can, as Helen so indicated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember that air is an insulator. So you can always use a mantra or any thought to hold out unwanted thoughts.
Ah.
That's what that whole exercise is for. And you can also adjust your balances in air and fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's true.
So, really, we're not... We are only in control or being controlled by our thoughts and our mind because that is the habit pattern and that is the... accepted way of being in our society. But if you would like to be a maverick and do otherwise, you can. That's what all of the master teachers are telling us to do.
Hmm?
They're not telling us that we have to change our world. They're saying just change our thoughts and feelings.
Yes.
And that
which, if we change our thoughts and feelings, then I guess our perception changes.
That is correct. And what that means is, therefore, the reality that you find yourself in is different.
Mm-hmm.
That's magic.
Ah.
So, when people say, why does God allow innocent babies to be killed? That's non-magic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so first of all, God didn't create the conditions on this planet that is causing babies to be killed. We're doing that.
Yeah.
And so when you stop seeing that as a primary issue and start seeing alive, happy, well babies, what do you think happens?
At least, the killing of babies decreases, I would probably think.
Well, it does.
Yeah.
Because, you see, you have shifted your focus.
Mm-hmm.
You have shifted that which is creating reality.
Yes.
To a whole other consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And so then what has attracted you matches that. So in your sphere of influence, you are creating healthy, non-killed babies.
Yes, in my sphere of influence, I am.
Correct. And the size of your sphere of influence only has to do with the ability you have to focus your intention.
Hmm.
It has nothing to do with anything else. It does not have to do with how much money you have. It does not have to do with how big you are or how strong you are. or how fat or thin you are, or how ugly or pretty you are, or anything else. It simply has to do with your ability to use the spirit of intent, to connect with it and use it. And it is another being, or it's not actually a being, but it's a spirit force in the world that is open to us, calling to us, wants to be utilized, but most people have no clue how to do it.
Well, I mean, a lot of people, I think, do use intention, you know.
They use intention, but that's not what I said. I said use the connection to the spirit of intent.
True. Yeah.
Intention on the world level is very different from connecting to the spirit of intent.
Can you explain that?
Somewhat, but it's beyond our reach right now. What we call willpower is something we apply as force to conditions in our world and around us. And that in of itself produces an opposite force. So if you want to apply your willpower, say, to end abortion, what do you think you're empowering equally? Anyone?
To keep it going.
Correct.
Doesn't pick up negatives.
You're equally enforcing both sides. That's what willpower does.
So you should say you want the healthy babies around. That's
the beginning. That's the first step. It's envisioning that which you want, not trying to make it happen. And then you have to look for the connection to the spirit of intent. But like I say, this is further advanced material, so let's not get too far afield as yet, because what we're doing here is laying the groundwork to shift our beliefs enough so that we can have enough perceptive ability available to do those kind of operations later on. But you remember, see, all of you all have made tremendous progress, but I want to remind you that the issues that you came into this course with are quite different, every one of you, than what they were. And if you think back, the things that you were concerned about, that you were plagued about, bothered by, have in some ways, I would suspect, shifted for each of you, and the things that you're concerned about now are probably quite different. So your perspective is already shifting, and it will shift even more. So, in willingness is a big step in that direction, because that's different from willpower. But we want to find out by experience, not by guessing. And then, Dan, did you do anything with divination or mirrors or any of that you would like to speak of?
No, I didn't do any of that. I did some omnils and some messages and some balance changing and lots of other stuff, but I didn't.
Okay. You might want to, at some point this week, do your mirrors, ward and bind them. It makes a safer haven for doing tarot.
Okay.
You have a more secure area.
I did find my pendulum, though.
Good. That's great. Jennifer, how about you?
I made a plate that looked like what Stephanie had on the video, and tried the pendulum,
mm-hmm.
and I think that came out pretty positive.
Good. Yeah, it takes some practice.
And I put some cold coffee in my chalice.
Tried that for divination?
Yeah, and I didn't get anything at first, and I let it sit. I came back to it, and I think I got something that helped me.
Yeah, good. Again, with a lot of those forms of divination, it takes a little time, and it takes being careful not to push.
Yeah. And I was going to do my mirrors, but I called in the lab, and you said that the eye of horse is a symbol. It's important to make it look like what's in the...
Yeah, we'll just give you some of those.
So I didn't do any of that, because...
That's all right. It would be easy to take them, like I've mentioned. Are any of you guys clever on the computer?
No, not me.
No, you aren't.
Yes.
Oh, Magnus, of course. Magnus, would you know how to... do you know those peel-off labels that are transparent? That you can put in your printer?
Yes. It's just, okay, when you buy from whichever merchandise, it comes from computer anyway, it has application that does that.
Right.
But some of them, you need to buy with a package that will come with the software, which will set it up and configure it to work in alignment with your printer.
Right, right. I understand that. But, I mean, have you done that before? It's the same as doing address labels or anything else. It's just that it's on a transparent than a white field.
Laminating paper.
Yeah, when I did it, it was with a plain paper. That was a long time ago.
Oh, okay. So you're not up on that process.
Well, what will make me print labels... Basically, it's like return label, mailing label, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Since I'm not into that so much, since all my bills are kind of...
Okay, well, you don't have to explain. Either you are or you aren't. I was just looking to see if anybody could make them up for everybody in class. But, because it's not that hard to do. I think maybe Sharon can do it. I'll talk to her.
It's not hard.
And then if she's willing to do it, she could send them out to everybody.
That'd be great.
Yeah, let me find out about that. I'll put a note.
You can't hardly trace them. I've tried tracing it onto a piece of laminating paper. But I don't think it's accurate enough.
Oh. Well, I used to just hand paint them on, and that worked. But it just takes too much time, so... since you're right near us, we'll just give you some. I have some. And then we'll see if Sharon will make them up for everybody.
Okay.
That would be great.
Sure.
I was even thinking of the no yes thing. No, well, go ahead, please.
Sure. Yeah, it's fine. We'll take care of it, okay? Helen, how about you? Anything you would like to report?
No. Yeah, pretty much I'm coming to class today as an active listener.
Okay. Well, so far you've been an active participant.
Yeah.
And Randy?
Well, I tried some divination with the water bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found was, and I find this with any... procedure, magic procedure that I'm trying to do is that I, at some point, I will lose my focus of intention, and I notice my mind will all of a sudden be drifting off into something else, and like I was trying to bring up a person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I kept trying to see that person, and I could fear, and then my mind would kind of meander off, I guess.
Sure.
And then when I would come back, it would be, seemed like, then I would be feel pressured, I guess, to regain my focus, and then it wouldn't work.
Well, that's kind of a pretty fair description, I would say.
Yeah.
Sort of like when we started with the water bowl originally, we said that it's important to get a clear surface, one,
mm-hmm.
and you don't want to push and you don't want to have too strong a need or an urge, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, because that in itself creates distortion.
Mm-hmm.
But also then you're finding out the dilemma that we talk about in terms of any study of this kind, that is holding one's focus.
Mm-hmm.
And so, obviously, that is a question of practice.
Yes. And it's difficult to hold, for me to hold my focus when what I'm focusing on is kind of vague anyway, in a way, vague to my references.
I understand.
Yeah.
So what I discovered was that if I went through the various forms of divination, there were some that were more...
would work better.
Yeah, right. That I would more relate to.
Yeah.
Well, and that changed over time, but initially, very much the way you described it.
Yeah.
You know, that some didn't work well at all, some I couldn't hold my focus,
mm-hmm.
And so forth. But also, another thing that I discovered is the level of my desire had a lot to do with it.
Ah, yes.
You know, if I was just doing it for a class exercise, mm-hmm. it probably wasn't a very high level of desire. But if I had lost something that I needed to find, there was a lot higher level of desire.
Absolutely.
And I'll just mention that one student found a $1,000 check this way they had lost.
That's definitely a high motivation.
Yeah.
That's great.
You think so?
And that's no lie. They had even forgotten they had gotten it. And
yeah.
Then they remembered and they said, oh my God, I've got that check. And they had no clue. They looked in all the obvious places where they would put it. In their desk. And it had fallen into the interior of the, you know, paneling of the desk.
Wow.
You know, and so when they tried this method, they also said initially they didn't see very much. Well, why not? Because it was in a dark area. Mm. But they persisted. And they got this sort of a hunch feeling. You all know that hunch feeling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they coupled with what they... Sometimes, you know, Randy, it's sort of like you think you're seeing what you think you're seeing.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be any really clearer than that at first.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went and looked, and, you know, I don't mean they broke their desk, but they tore it apart, so to speak, and found it.
Huh.
Right where it was pictured. And I can tell you a funny story on myself. We were in Moab, Utah for 4 days, and we stopped at a spring and got water, and I had my bike rack on the back, so I undid it and let it down so I could open the back to put the water in. And I have a rule that I always take the pen and the cotter pen and put them back in, no matter how long it is, so I don't lose them. I didn't do it. I didn't listen to my rule and laid them on the back bumper. And then I did something I've never done. I forgot to put the bike rack up and drove off with the pin and the cotter pin, which are fairly special. Cotter pin is not, but the, it's not actually a cotter pin, but one of those other type pins that you fast on, fast off, spring pin. But the pin that goes through the shaft of the thing that holds it upright is a fairly, it might not be that easy to find in a hardware store or something. And then we drove up a very bumpy road, four-wheel drive road, and then we went to turn around, 8 or 9 miles up that road. Stephanie said, the bike rack is still down. And, of course, the cotter pin was still sitting there, but the other pin was gone. And I was sort of devastated momentarily, and I sort of jury-rigged it, and we drove back down, and we looked where we first came onto the bumpy road, nothing. Said, let's go back to the spring. We went back to the spring and looked, and nothing. And it was 4 in the afternoon, so we had to really hustle to get to hardware stores, bike stores, try to find one. And I had this hunch. Look up under the back door where the bumper goes up under the gate, back gate, how it opens, and there it was. I saw it there in my mind. And it was right there.
And that was achieved mainly through intention and desire. I mean, you didn't use a water bowl or...
No, I didn't use any specific technique, but it's the same technique. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
It is exactly that. It's wanting it, but not feeling desperate. You can't feel desperate. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
And Stephanie had been so relaxed with the whole thing. She had just sort of laughed at me a little bit, but then, and she said, I knew you were going to find it, you know, but she didn't say that earlier on. She didn't goad me or anything, because sometimes if you're upset and somebody says, oh, you're going to find it, it isn't actually helpful.
No.
But, you know, it's like the need was there. The intention was there, the desire was there in the right balance. So that's what you all are studying, is how to create that balance. Does that help, Randy?
Yes.
Cool. Well, I want to talk some about the tarot, and I want to try to demystify the tarot for you some. Because it does not have to be a huge, challenging affair to work with the tarot. Once you understand how it's composed and how it's made up, it does not require a huge amount of memorization. It does help to get to be able to picture the cards in your mind. That's extremely helpful. That's probably the biggest step in the whole thing. And later on when we do the tarot intensive, we do a thing where we actually wear a card every day. And you can even start that now. Which means just randomly pick a card out of the deck each day. Say it's the four discs. And look at the card and remember exactly as much as you can what it looks like. It's a guy sitting on a chair with under each foot and one in his lap and one over his head. So that's enough. You don't have to. And there's a fortress thing behind him. It's a big giveaway. But that's enough. And then you look at what are the description of the card tell you. In other words, what does that card mean? Well, it's your base of operations. Well, that makes sense. It's discs. That's Earth. Okay. So it's your foundation, your base of operations. It's your home. It's your fortress. It's your castle. It's your, you know, your office. It's your where you work out of. Whatever you base your foundation on, really. And so then you say, okay, today I'm going to look for every possible situation involving the four discs. And somebody comes in, they talk about and they're trying to refinance their home. It's a problem for this. Not the refinance, but talking about their home and making, shoring it up and making it strong and reliable and so forth. And you see, you do that and you'll never forget what that card means. Now, I'll bet you just because I've told you all this, no one of you will ever forget what the four discs is. Because I also told you the picture of it, too. And we've just been talking about coming out with a new kind of tool for you guys where we would picture every card. It's a laborious process. And put a little description about the picture. Because we suddenly realized that probably would be the best way to study these. Does that make sense to you all?
Yeah.
Is to see the picture and see the description connected, so to speak. So, anyway, the history of the tarot, it goes way back, the tarot itself. It was used, by early monks and priests and so forth in the Catholic Church or whatever the early Christian sort of religion would be called, sort of as a method, not just divination, but a method of instruction, principles. And that probably was mostly, actually, the major arcana, which we'll talk about, because that's all different from the four other suits that you are more familiar with. And, of course, the suits that would be like our modern-day playing deck. Whereas, of course, the Joker that often you get with a modern-day playing deck is one of the major arcana, interestingly enough. But in the modern times, in the time of the Order of the Golden Dawn, there was a lot of attention to the tarot, redesigning the tarot. And, of course, we're in a period now where there's a lot of, everybody's making decks these days. There's hundreds of decks. But in those times, there were primarily three new decks that came on the scene in the Golden Dawn era, Wade Riders, Morgan Greer's, and the Thought deck by Aleister Crowley. And they were all aiming at the same thing, but just sort of disagreeing with kind of the best way to get there. Wade was the first one to do a deck, and then Morgan Greer said it was too austere and it needed to be more colorful, so they did a deck, and then Crowley said, a pox on both of your houses because you all are being sort of, what's that word, when you're making things too easy or idealistic. He said, no, your decks are too idealistic. This is not matching the way life really is. And he created his deck, which is generally known as a reverse tree deck. Which, what all that means is that he would call a spade a spade. For instance, I think you all would just find, if you watch yourselves, that when issues of success or failure come up, in general, in society, for most people, we tend to be somewhat critical of our successes and perhaps lean towards the failure side. Would you all agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
When we describe our accomplishments. So with the Seven of Discs, which is the card which shows a guy leaning on his hoe, looking at his garden, contemplating his garden, what he's actually doing is contemplating his achievements. And, of course, Crowley said, whereas Morgan Greer said that they, you know, that gave it that sense of how well are you doing or looking at one's successes, Crowley said, no, that's not the way people are, so he called the card failure. So that's what we mean by reverse tree deck, giving it sort of... I don't know if you want to say negative implications, but giving it more typical implications. Now, of course, what you're going to find out is that when we use the deck, there's no good or bad card. Although a lot of people, that's the way they do it, but this is not so. There are upright and reverse cards in readings, and then there are second cards in readings. There's three ways a card can show up in a reading. Upright means the positive condition of the meaning. And reverse means it's the negative condition or lack of the meaning, whatever the meaning is. And as a second card, and we're probably one of the few schools in the whole world that uses second cards or knows anything about them, but there are a few others perhaps. The second card, which is laying across the base card on its side, is the actual meaning of the card. It has no positive or reverse, it's just the meaning. So those are the three ways a card can show up. So you could only say that the Seven of Discs would refer to one's failures or one seeing their efforts as not doing so well or failures if it were in the reverse or upside down mode to the reader's position as a base card. But if it's upright, it means that the person is seeing their accomplishments in good light. Appreciating their accomplishments, you could say.
Alan?
Yeah.
When you say upright, does that mean when I look at it, it's sitting upright, and when you say reverse, it's turned
upside down?
That's what you mean?
Right. That's exactly what I mean. So in other words, when you throw out a reading, you're going to put the base cards out on the table in front of you first, okay? And they'll either be upright or reverse, according to where you sit. They'll either be upright or upside down. That's why you shuffle. When you shuffle, if anybody hasn't done that, you do the Vegas-type shuffle head-to-head. So otherwise, if you don't, you just check your deck. If they're all upright or all reverse, you didn't do it right. You need to shuffle again 50 times. They've got to be mixed up, upside down, and right side up as well. It's the order. Okay. So in the Order of the Golden Dawn, they said that there were three things they wanted to achieve with a tarot deck. There were three purposes for the tarot, aside from looking kind of cool and nice. One was straight divination. And most of the decks that are created will do that. You can use them for that in some way or another. Some people just take a card and talk about it. Yeah, that's fine. Okay. And then the second thing is for spell work, and specifically for tarot spells. And most decks will not do that. They're not designed for that. Most of the decks on the open market today, other than these three. And then the third thing is for working in combination with the Kabbalah, or what's known as the Tree of Life. And again, most of the decks, particularly your Native American type decks, your Uranian decks, your Hindu decks, your animal decks, your a lot of the fanciful and lovely, beautiful decks that are being created have no application to the Tree of Life or the Kabbalah whatsoever. So that's why we designate these three decks so that you can accomplish all three of those purposes if you choose to. And of course, the word tarot is a disguised word during the period of the Spanish Inquisition and perhaps even earlier than that, when the gypsies used the tarot and they were persecuted for use of it as fortune telling, because only God could talk about anybody's future, I guess. So they changed it. Originally, the word was rota, which meant the wheel, and that's what everybody called it. And so they said, okay, no, it's not the rota, it's the tarot. We're not dealing with that at all, and it was for game play. And that's how they got away with it. And, of course, they took the Major Arcana, the fifth suit, out of it and hid that because that was too suspicious. And that's what produced our modern playing deck. as far as there are thousands of books written about the tarot. Everybody writes books. And with your deck, there's a little booklet that comes. And basically, from our point of view, in the way we use the tarot, they're all useless. They mean nothing. The only one I know of that has some value is Dion Fortune's book called The Mystical Kabbalah. But it's really hard to understand it. But it has some. I've used it for some of the sort of more mystical side of the tarot. But you see, what most people do with the cards, they do not key the cards. This is a very specific operation to us. They do not understand what a living symbol is. So therefore, they say that the meaning of the card is implicit in all the symbols on the card. Tons of people do that. That's about everybody. And we don't. We say that when you lay a reading, because you're using a lot, that the symbols change. That the whole card changes. So there's nothing, we don't study the symbols in the card. Because they're not static. We know some basic things about some of them, but other than that, it's not what we're up to. And it was primarily taught as an oral tradition, not a written tradition, and we do as much as we can to satisfy that and not go off into long books and so forth about the tarot. We want to understand the tarot, not memorize the tarot. And then the next thing that is different about our use of the tarot is for every reading you do, you always record every reading you do, too, in your book of shadows. And you always pick a signifier for a reading. And that is a card from the deck, or in some cases later on you'll learn to make signifiers, if need be, that ties the reading to a specific person or event or subject of inquiry. That is not typically done, but we do that. Because that clarifies, like with clarity, that tells us exactly what is the content of this reading, and we generally write a question relative to that in our book of shadows to specify the reading. I want to know about so-and-so. What's going on with so-and-so? That's the question. Particularly for a Celtic cross reading. And so how do we pick the signifiers? We'll talk more about that, but just in general, we do it by sun sign and by the what's called the court cards. You match the signifier to the person's sun sign, i.e., are they a fire sign, a air sign, a water sign, or an earth sign, and you match that to the suit, i.e., that wands are air, and swords are fire. Now, in spite of the fact that most of the people doing tarot think it's the reverse, that swords are air and wands are fire, but you having studied tools know that would be relatively absurd. That's just a smokescreen, and yet it caught most of the world that does tarot into that, and that's what they're doing. They're convinced that's the way it is. Chalices are water, and plates or pentacles are earth. So if you have a Capricorn, that's a plate. If you have a Scorpio, that's the water, chalice, so forth. And then you match the age of the person by representing them. If they are a youth, up to a teenager, they're a page. From conception to teenager. If they are a teenager, they're a knight. An adult female is a queen, an adult male is a king. Questions on any of this so far? Anybody? Everybody still there?
Yeah. No question.
I'm sorry.
could you go through that again?
Which part?
The signs on the edge.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to write it down and I'm missing out on it.
Should be in your notes.
Oh, okay.
And I haven't looked ahead to see for the next class where it shows up, but let me just make sure I'm telling you. Yeah. On page 164,
okay.
In the next class, it talks about choosing a signifier.
Okay.
Well, actually, I wonder if that's a repeat of what I just been reading you anyway. It does not go into sun signs there. I want to see where it does.
I couldn't find the sun sign thing anywhere.
You could not?
No, I looked for it.
Thanks, that's important to know. Okay, we'll send that out for, can you all write pretty fast? There are only 12 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to give you the signs, okay? I'll start with air. Gemini, Aquarius, Libra. You got those?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Fire. Leo, Aries, Sagittarius. Suppose I could give you an actual order, but it doesn't matter. Got those?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Water, Cancer, Scorpio, Pisces. Earth, Taurus, Virgo, Capricorn. Okay, now as Magnus asked about the ages, repeating that, the page, that's a young person, that's something new. So that's from conception to teenage. Got that, Magnus?
Yes, sir.
Okay. The knight is a teenager. Why is the knight a teenager? Did you all know that Alexander the Great, that conquered most of the known world, did that when he was somewhere between 16 and 18?
Wow, no. That's amazing.
He was. See, the knights had that kind of aggressive energy. Teenagers. Do you, any of you all know any teenagers?
A lot of them.
Not anymore.
Do they have aggressive energy?
They do.
Okay. So that's why they're knights. And then adult females are queens and adult males are kings. Now that's in your notes. Okay. Now, the major and minor arcana cards, we've talked a little bit about that, but you've got your four suits, which, of course, are your wands, your swords, or your air, your fire, your water, your earth, your wands, your swords, your chalices, your plates. And then you've got this fifth suit called the major arcana. So all the four are called minor arcana, and the fifth is the major arcana. Now, what I'm going to do next is to give you all, you've got this in your notes, I'm going to talk you through the major arcana in such a way that it hopefully will make a lot of sense to you as to what these are and why they are, in a different order than it is in your numbering system, the way they are themselves numbered, because it will present them in a more logical world order. And the reason that you can't often understand the meanings of the major arcana just by looking at the cards is because they were old symbols in a different culture. And we don't have, and oftentimes, the meanings have changed. We don't have those kind of meanings. If I talk about a Hierophant, you all will scrunch up your noses and wonder what I'm talking about. That is one of the major arcana. But we don't talk about a Hierophant anymore, do we?
Nope.
So what is a Hierophant? It's a federal strike mediator. Well, it's not just a federal strike mediator, but it's any mediator. But we know of mediators. And believe it or not, the Catholic Pope, the Pope of the Catholic Church, was considered to be the main Hierophant on this planet, or the big cheese Hierophant or something. But that was only true up until about 1300. After that, you see, the Hierophant, the mediator, the Pope, was supposed to get people communicating, keep people communicating. If there was a problem with the people and with deity, the Hierophant got them together and said, now, look, you guys got to communicate about this and come to some resolution, and I'll help. That was originally what the Pope was for, but what happens in most systems as they go downhill is power and control becomes an issue, and then the Pope started making a law which would put him down at the level of the Emperor and not the Hierophant, and therefore we lost the whole understanding of a Hierophant. So, questions on any of that before I talk about the Major Arcana?
No.
So, I don't expect you to take notes on this. Of course, the nice thing is that the class is recorded. I want you to listen and see if you can understand. But if it helps to look at the cards, unless you've already shuffled your deck, in that case it would be pretty hard to do this. If you want to look at the card while I'm talking about it, but I'm going to go fairly rapidly. But the first one is the Emperor, and that's number 4. So if you haven't shuffled, then you can very easily go to the Emperor. If you have shuffled, good luck. But the Emperor basically looks like the Emperor. I mean, he's sitting on a throne. Okay. So the other thing I want to mention to you as I go through this, if you were to take your books, or any book on the tarot, or the little book that comes with the tarot deck, and if you went through every card in the book, or any book, and looked at the meanings that we're going to work with, you would never find a match. In fact, some of them are just fairly ridiculous. So that's why we just don't pay any attention to those. And they're very slanted. They always talk about good and bad cards. Okay, so the Emperor is basically the system that we live in. It is laws. It is all the things that apply to that. It is social standards, traditions, the values of society all come under the Emperor. Commitments and contracts on the world level. Documents, legal matters, anything that has to do with creating laws and conditions and so forth like that comes under the Emperor. So what we're looking at as we go through here, we're going to be looking at the first breakdown I'm giving you is sort of the stages of the world that we work in. So that's the first stage. That's in man's world, woman's world, our self-created conditions. Has nothing to do with natural order of things, natural laws. It's simply, and if you all know, our law comes from Roman law. But it also comes from the English re-editing of Roman law. And do you all know what tort law is? Anybody know what tort law is?
Court law?
tort.
Oh, tort.
Okay. That's in England, they decided to call it tort law. What that meant was they arbitrarily decided in these conditions, you're the winner. In these conditions, you're the winner. It had nothing to do with fairness. Totally an arbitrary system. That's what our legal system is based on. Set of arbitrary factors called tort law. All of that would come under the emperor. Now you step up, what would be the next level of reality? Anybody?
Self-made law? I mean self-created?
No. Has nothing to do with self.
Justice?
No. Well, what would be the next world you would be talking about? If we start with man's law,
it would be universal law.
Okay, that's close. How about world law? How about natural law?
Mm-hmm.
How about the world of nature? Its laws. That's the Empress. We live on what is considered to be a female planet, grandmother. That's why we say sky mother or earth mother. I'm sorry. Oh, dear. So the Empress is everything, all the species of animals, all the growing things, all the forces of nature. The winds come under the Empress. All the natural order of things. So that differentiates it from our law. But, of course, that is the operating laws in this world and the way they actually work. So there you have the emperor, you have the empress. It's a step up. And then the world card takes things up higher than that. That's like all the things that we say affect the world at large, whether it's political forces affecting the world or the possibility of economic disasters or the possibility of warfare disasters or natural disasters or anything, but also the planetary world around us, the moon, solar system. Because obviously this Earth is a part of the solar system, and so the world relates to this part of the world that we are intimately in. Therefore, it's not perhaps a real ordinary card in a reading in a sense because it steps the level way up. But you might get a world card in a reading that says, you're not here to fuss with details. You're a big thinker or you've got to do something. Like, I don't think Joan of Arc, she would have probably had a lot of world cards come up in her readings and so forth. So it kind of tells you what level you're looking at. And also if you want to look at those, if you want to do divinations on those levels, that's then the world card would be your signifier. So it's another level above the Empress and two levels above the Emperor. And then the Wheel of Fortune is the next level up, it's the universe. It's the whole thing. So it's kind of helpful in a way because some forces have to do with the whole matrix of the universe, and that kind of tells you that. Dan, when you went out and you talked to the winds, they may have given you the image of either the world or the Empress. Or the Wheel of Fortune, if they had, then what they would have been telling you is there's something else going on much bigger and we can't meet your demands because of something else we're being told to do for a very specific reason. So those four cards give you the section we're working with, the level we're working with.
Is there a significance to the corresponding between the numbers on the cards?
No. No, in fact, they've been bantered back and forth a bunch anyway, but this is what they've settled with, and the numbers really don't pertain much to anything, and I don't even think of them, and then that's why I rarely know the numbers, because I don't think of them in that regard. Now, the sun, just kind of the way it looks, is your spiritual health. How healthy, since, remember, sun yellow is spirit life force, and the sun is our spiritual health, so there's a definite relationship there. If you're just talking about physical health, that's the Ace of Discs. But this is talking about not just your physical health. We're not saying that your spiritual health doesn't affect your spiritual health. I mean that your spiritual health doesn't affect your physical health. It does. But the sun is where you find the whole issue of the spiritual health of something, the spiritual well-being, the spiritual makeup, and so forth, how well is it working, has to do with the sun. How well is any endeavor being nourished spiritually would tell you, the sun would tell you, if it came up in reading. And then the next thing we get is four cards, which again show a spiritual progression of learning, starting with the moon. And also there's a lot of relationship between major arcana and minor arcana cards, and that will come up. We'll be talking about that too. Such as the moon is the higher octave of the Eight of Cups. The Eight of Cups is a card that shows a guy walking out of a swampy area. He's leaving the swamp. That's when we begin to understand our emotions and the value of them in a different way rather than always reacting to them. We're beginning to transform or utilize or comprehend our emotions, such as when we talk about, well, if you use repetitive thinking and you then apply a lot of emotion to that, or feeling to that, it's what creates reality. So the whole study of that would, say, be about the Eight of Cups. But the moon is the major arcana version of that. So that's at the spirit level, or at the fullness of ourselves level, where we are beginning to use our emotions in a different way. Use them for our spiritual understanding and growth. And of course, in most systems, the moon relates to emotions, and it does here. But it has to do with how well are we using those emotions as spiritual beings? Or how primitive are we using them? Terrorism, wouldn't that be sort of a good example of a moon reverse?
Yeah.
That's not using in a very good way.
No, more like a moon being eclipsed.
Right, which would happen last night, a gorgeous one.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the next step up from the moon is temperance. That's when you're beginning to have an understanding of spiritual principles, such as perhaps being in a school like this, or really beginning to see that there are spiritual principles that need to be paid attention to, like rules of the road and so forth. And you're beginning to understand them. And you're wanting to live by them. Most of you are at least at that level. And like when Randy was talking today about he wanted to get that divination to work and it was struggling, that's typical of temperance. It's not easy yet, but I want it, and I know the principles, and I have to use them, but I have to practice. Well, the next level up from that is the star. And that's that I've done it enough so that it's become more natural to me. I don't have to think so hard about it. I pretty much go there instead of reacting and losing it more and more. I'm getting good at it. I'm maintaining my balance a lot better. It's not like walking a tightrope anymore. It's become fairly comfortable and fairly natural, and I really want it. There's a lot of energy for it, a lot of willingness for it, and I wouldn't turn back. At temperance, you're still on the edge. By the star, you're not going to go back. There's nothing to go back to. And then at the very top is the Fool, which is sort of taken from the Court Jester days, and it says this is the spiritually advanced person, the adept, if you want. And they have integrated it totally into their being, and they use it well. Of course, the Fool reverse would be you don't, and you're being foolish. But spiritually foolish. But upright, it says that I'm so into it that normal realities don't grab me anymore the way they used to. That's why the picture of the Fool stepping off a cliff and the dog pulling at his leg where he doesn't care, because he knows darn well he's not going to fall. So that's a level of spiritual mastery that makes good teachers, good demonstrators, and so forth. And generally there isn't, in the star, there's still the possibility of spiritual arrogance. Just given the way the star is, it shines a lot, you know. But by the Fool, not really, because you know the hazards too well. That's the value of the Fool. And if you recall, the Court Jester in old days was the one person in the entire court that could make fun of the king or the queen, and did. And they were prized for that, because they were not afraid to call a spade, and the court, whole court depended on that, as did the king and the queen. So that has come through well for us in the nature of the Fool. Then we get cards that represent more our ability to do and create. We get the Magi, or the Magician, whichever you all deck calls it, the Magician. Crowley called it the Magi, either way. That's a trained person doing magic. That's where you have all the knowledge of the four elements, you know how to do spells, you know how to do the process of divination, and you can create order through your doing this and so forth. That always represents trained, capable at doing magic. It can also designate in a reverse mode the need to do that, if you're not, you know. Or it can also represent adverse magic being done, i.e. negative spells and so forth, which we can pick up in a reading and then, by a process called a boomerang, simply send back to the doer. It's a very slick process. So the Magi always has to do with training. You look at him, and he's got all his tools there on the table. He's got a quartz rod, which is an infinite energy tool. He's highly skilled and trained. Now, you could say in a way that the high priestess is the female counterpart, but that would not totally be accurate. It is, and it isn't. Does not mean the Magi has to be a man, does not mean the high priestess has to be a woman. That's not what we're dealing with. But oftentimes, they will, you know, they can stand for one another in a reading, or the priestess can come up as indicating a trained magician that is a woman. It can happen that way. Sorceress and so forth. Because they're somewhat different qualities. The man's magic and woman's magic has often a different imprint to it. But there's another factor. The high priestess can also, particularly in reverse or upside down mode, represent religious persecution, or maybe not, that might be too strong a word. Religious bias, that would be a better word. I don't know if any of you all have ever had someone telling you if you study magic, you're going to go to hell. Or they'll pray for you and hope that your soul will be okay and you'll come back to your senses. That would be a reverse high priestess, that activity. It's muddling and interfering for supposedly good religious causes. So that's sort of the difference between the two, because the Magi will never represent that. But the high priestess can represent that. And then we get some experience type cards, like the Hangman, Hermit and Lovers, Devil, and so forth. Hangman, that's the guy hanging upside down on the tree of Odin. It's Odin hanging upside down on the tree of life. Right, sorry. Any magical school would come under the Hangman. Basically, the Hangman is your desire and your thirst to seek the meaning of life, to go out and have adventures, to travel, to look everywhere, to understand the thirst for knowing what all this means, how it all works. It indicates a person like who can't sit at home. They've got to go out and have experiences. And they feed themselves on those experiences. So that's why schools, magical schools, or higher schools of higher learning would come under the Hangman too. The adventure, the thirst for knowledge, thirst for understanding. And then once you've done that, you go to the Hermit that says, now I want to really integrate everything I've experienced. I want to understand it fully so I can integrate and use it. So I sort of pull back from so much activity. Does not necessarily mean being a true hermit in that respect, but that I get out of the mainstream or flow of things so that I can do some integration, so I can write a book about it, so I can work on my notes, so I can do some exercises to see how it works better, so I can do some readings, that kind of thing. That's the hermit. That's sort of, you know, give me a little separation, give me some peace. I want to really appreciate and explore all that I've learned for purposes of integration. So I know how to go out and cut and fit. I know how to use this stuff. I now become functionally literate. Because still at the level of the hanged man, you know a lot, but you may not know how to use it all, how to put it together. It might be sort of, whoa, there's a lot to hang on to. And then the lovers has primarily to do with one's personal interintegration. How balanced are we? Or even if we're talking about some outer thing, a corporation, whatever, how balanced is it? Is it all male chauvinistic? Is it all analytical? That's not very balanced. So the lovers always has to do with the issues of the integration of yin and yang, the integration of the dark and the light, the integration of the animus, the integration of the feminine and the masculine polarities. How well polarized are we? How well do we maintain a broad enough view of anything from a balanced perspective? Does not deal with love affairs, that's the Two of Cups, even though the rest of the world is convinced it does. But if you look at the card, you'll see that those, well, it really is about that balance. The Devil, which is probably one of the Devil and Death are the most misrepresented cards in the deck, possibly. The Devil has to do with how well do we remember what we came here for? How well do we keep on to our spiritual plan or our birth vision? How well are we manifesting in the physical world what we spiritually knew and had learned and came here for? How well are we keeping our commitments and our contracts to ourselves? Occasionally, on a large scale level, the Devil card may come up to talk about world level contracts, but generally that would be the Emperor. Occasionally it might, but it would be bigger than the personal. But the major meaning is just how well am I carrying out my own plan as a being in the world? How well am I creating? How well am I manifesting? How well am I using resources? How resourceful am I? Whereas the Death card is about the beginning and ending of cycles. It's just a cycle card. It has to do with any kinds of cycle. All things that begin have an ending, and out of that ending comes another beginning. So it's a study of cycles. When is it time for something to recycle or change? It's a change card. It's the primary personal change card. Because the higher level change card for bigger events that are out of our personal control is the Tower card, which we haven't gotten to yet. So if you want to think about changes of any kind, think of the Death card.
Alan, do you know how the Devil, why that was used to represent how well we're doing with our spiritual contracts?
Because that's what the Devil is about.
You mean to tempt us to not?
No, there's no such, there's no guy out there that I have never found any being that called himself Satan in this entire universe.
So you're saying the traditional understanding of Satan or the Devil isn't really based on anything real?
I'm saying it's not based on, as far as I know, any being that is there to, you know, like those horror movies that show these just horrendous beasts that come up, and or like The Exorcist and all that sort of stuff.
Uh-huh.
I've never found anybody that answers to those ingredients. I've found some horrible things, don't get me wrong, chaotic and so forth. I have never found a being that goes around doing those things like the horror movie show. So, again, you see, if you consider this, shame and guilt, would you say that is not probably aligned with what we think of as the devil?
Right.
Okay. The classic devil.
Mm-hmm.
So what causes you shame and guilt? It's when you don't do things according to your own desire and aim, isn't it?
Okay.
So you're breaking your own contract. Do you understand?
Yeah, I got it.
And so that's what eats at us. But remember, I told you all that karma is the law of misunderstood. Because we are taught and we believe that if I did it wrong, I have to pay for it. Isn't that so?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm telling you that it's not so. Because as soon as you forgive yourself, as soon as you forget that you have made this huge mistake, what do you think happens?
It's gone.
It's gone. There's nobody else pointing a finger.
Right.
So we carry our own record, lifetime to lifetime. And we persecute ourselves. And we have fabulous memories.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Sure. So then, the Hierophant I've talked about, that is the mediator. And all of you all will be studying a lot about being Hierophants, being communicators. Basic shamanism is, of course, all about that. How to communicate. How to find out. If you want to find out if there's a devil out there in basic shamanism, you'll have the method to go interview, find him and interview him. Live, real, on site, if you can find him. I've never been able to find him.
Is that because you don't believe in him?
No, it has nothing to do with belief. I'm totally willing to believe in him.
Okay.
I'm totally willing to not believe in him. But it doesn't make a whole lot of sense if we say we live in a universe that is created by a creator who is all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-loving, and all sorts of other things. Where does this devil come from? Except in our minds.
Alan?
Yeah.
It's amazing the way you explain that sometimes. That kind of, this moment got me really thinking. You mentioned it before.
Right.
About karma.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I try at this moment to relate it to myself, that a lot of time what I think is doing good, I really hurt myself.
Okay.
But, I kind of live a life of... a lot of time I tell people I'm a prisoner of my conscience.
Right, right, exactly, exactly.
Okay, then a lot of time I find it difficult to forgive myself, so I got to do it right.
And that's correct, but that's all happening in your mind.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. It's our biggest prison. And I'm saying that we live in a universe of light and order. That outside of mind, I do not know of any influence other than other beings' minds who maybe want to play dirty pool. I don't know of any great negative evil influence. I've not found it. I find order. I find the operating laws of this universe to be of intense order and purpose. But keep an open mind. I'm not remember, in this course, nothing is mandated. This is all hypothetical. You prove it to be so or not so by your experience. I'm not telling you the way it is. I'm just telling you it's a possibility to consider. Is that okay?
That's correct.
Okay. So the Hierophant is a communicator and a researcher and goes out and gets other parties together to communicate, to work things out. That's the whole thing of mediation and communication. And then strength is pretty much just that. It is the virtue of impeccability. It is having courage, having determination, having willingness to put yourself or anything out there because you know it is what we're here to do. It is, there are not a lot of cards that just speak of, like, just do it because it's the right, and that's where your force comes from and so forth. So that card gives us, it's a power card, as is the Chariot, really. It's a power card because it talks about doing it for the right reasons, for the right motivations. Or, of course, if it's reversed, then maybe you're not doing it for the right reasons. But the whole idea is that it has virtue there. And it has empowerment there. It has purpose. It has intention. It's knowing your capabilities and then going with that, taking the next step. And it's also endeavoring to persevere, in a sense, kind of that earth thing. It's an earth-associated card. Because it's saying that I don't give up. Once I know what I'm doing is right, I just don't give up. I don't listen to my mind's hankering and so forth, nattering. And the Chariot, if you've ever driven one or seen them driven, is all about control, proper control. Not the kind of control that people do to one another, but inner control, maintaining all of one's inner centers, emotional, intellectual, physical, and so forth, in the right balance. It's about being able to work with a number of factors all at once with control. It's a shaman's card. It's knowing how to be in a tricky or a tight situation and not panic and do it right. Think it through and do it right. Because to drive a chariot and to manage four horses with just individual lines to each horse is very challenging, particularly the way they used to do it where you were fighting other charioteers at the same time. So it does have to do with basic issues of being in control within ourselves, within our world. Not controlling the outer, because it's the inner that then relates to the outer. And the tower, as I mentioned before, has to do with, it's another change card. Like death is a change card and the tower is a change card. But tower is great universal change, big change, worldwide change. Mount St. Helens blowing up would be the tower. You didn't cause that directly. You know, planes flying into the World Trade Center, that's the tower stuff. That's not death card. Death card was when you decided not to go there that day. You changed something. You said, it doesn't feel right. Somehow, I don't know. And there were people that had that experience, too.
Yeah.
Judge, another easily misunderstood card. It is not any judgment, judging body. Judgment is how well do we use our own spiritual past experience? How well have we learned from all our hanged man experiences and hermit integrating of those experiences lifetime to lifetime? And now in our present lifetime or in our present experiences, how well are we using all of that experience? Or are we just throwing it out the window and running with an emotion because I love her and she spurned me and I'm going to show her and so forth? That is kind of not using judgment well. Because judgment will tell you, yeah, I did that 20 other times and 20 other lifetimes, and every time it didn't turn out so hot. And then the last one is justice, and that is basically universal law. That is the things that we study. It's not some governing body that is out to get us or put us down or anything else. It is simply the way this all operates in the world. It is the combination of all the laws and effects in this universe. And the way it all operates, and the way it integrates, and the way that it outputs, and so forth. So, that was pretty quick, but I'm hoping that you all got sort of a feeling for these cards by doing this way. Any questions or comments? Have I dazed you all into senselessness?
No. So, did we do Wheel of Fortune?
Yes.
Oh.
That's the universe.
Oh, that's the universe. Okay.
Right. That's the biggest picture.
Okay.
So I don't have time to go through the minor arcana, except I want to mention just a couple of the easy way to get the minor arcana. And because at this time you all would know, hopefully, each of the elements, i.e. that wands, being airs, ideas, knowledge, intellect, thought, reason, communication, all that stuff. All that stuff we've been studying and so forth. So all the air cards are wand cards relate to that in some way. But what you probably don't yet know is, well, what do the numbers mean? You know, and of course, we've given you notes on every card. So, and just because every card does not have a given reverse meaning does not mean they don't have reverse meaning. Just reverse the positive. We just gave it to you where it might be not so obvious. But if you look, paragraph or part number 7, meanings of numbers in the Tarot. Page 157 in my book, maybe different number in yours. Everybody there? Anybody not there?
They're here.
Okay. All twos are choices. Doesn't matter whether it's two of wands, two of swords, two of cups, or two of discs. They're all choices. Is it this or that? That's what twos are. If it's two of wands, it's choices of ideas, choices of beliefs, choices of opinions. If it's two of swords, it's choices of action. Some say blind choices because the two of swords is a lady holding two swords and she's blindfolded. But you see, that's that sort of Crowley type thing in a way. Because it's not blind choices of action when they are guided by your understanding and your experience. Otherwise, it can be. But at the same time, This may not make a lot of sense at this point, but just store it away for some day to go ahead, take it out and look at it. It really doesn't matter what you do here on this planet, in this in these lifetimes, as long as you do something. Because you learn from it all. So you say, it's not blind choices, it's not having to look so hard at your choices. And to accost his choices of emotional choices, that's relationships. Love relationships. To address is earth level agreement, you know, physical level, mundane level choices. Do I want to be a pirate or do I want to be an airplane pilot? There's a lot of times we say, oh God, I didn't make the right choice in that. I lost, whatever, you know. I put my money on the wrong horse. Or I put my money on the right horse. That's good, this. Okay. Threes are the result of your choices, i.e., what do you end up then with? Okay, so I picked this way rather than that way. That then is my path. That's what I'm walking on. That's my environment. Because that's what builds your environment. The choices that you make create your environment. So think about it this way. For Two of Cups is your relationships and your love relationships. For any real strong relationships, then the Three of Cups is your family. Well, I mean, you're growing up. You're not like your family when you get married. But your siblings, your friends, it's friendships. It's the result of those choices. The path that you create of people, feeling people, emotional people. And the four is when you bring in a new factor, a new influence, a new beginning, a levying up, a raising of the level, a new idea, perhaps, if it's wands, four wands. Actually, four wands is harmony of ideas. It's ideas, they're new in a sense because they all work together. Now, watch what happens at the five. Resistance, conflict. Because that's, up to now, everything has been moving forward very nicely, very smoothly. And at the five, you bring in the factor of resistance, which is differentiation, i.e., do I want this or do I want that? That's what resistance is for. It creates sort of the necessity to compare and contrast. And it can, of course, occur from the energy of the four as well. But your fives are all conflicts. It's in the five of wands is mental conflict, either in you or with others. We just fought it out and never arrived at a decision. Nobody was really happy about that. That's a five of wands reverse. Five of swords is out and out, just dueling it out. Battling it out. Actively, anger and all the works. Reverse. Upright, it's having learned better. Not having to do that. Maybe you started connecting to judgment, your spiritual experience. And then the six, this is really cool, because if you've got through the resistance and the battles and the five, the six is the reward. It's what you gain through what you've done. Then the seven is questions of achievement. Okay, so we came here to achieve things in the world. We feel this is really important to make our mark, to demonstrate. So, it's how do we do with that? Like the Seven of Swords, say, is how well do you hold your energy? Seven of Discs is how well do you manifest? Seven of Cups, often called the disillusionment card or the distraction card or just simply even, addiction, if it's reverse. It's all the pleasures of life that would sort of be distractions, or we learn from them. So, how well do I do with pleasures? Have I learned to appreciate them? Or are they kind of running me? And the Seven of Wands is how well have I achieved a sense of standing to my to things that I know to be so? Am I willing to stay true to my knowledge? The Eight again is obstacles or challenges. Interestingly enough, that's the Eight of Discs is career, is our work card, our career card. Things we say, I'm a this or that. Eight of Discs. But that's a challenge card. So could it be that what we set out to do in that sense of things is to create our challenges? Give us something to push against. And then the Nine is completion. When you've kind of wound it all up, say like the Nine of Discs, which is called the Lady in the Garden card. And the Lady in the Garden card is talking about someone that has mastered dealing with the physical world, doing it really well. Accomplishment. Nine of Swords. In its reverse mode, that's called the Nightmare card, and it's also the Bank card, but upright, it's how do you deal well with all that stuff inside? If you want it, that's the Devil card. The real Devil card, because it takes a tremendous amount of control and knowledge to deal well with all the illusions and fantasies that are created in our inner world and act on us. That's the Nine of Swords.
Alan?
Yeah.
Does bank clearing have anything to do with clearing out the stuff that nightmares and such are made of?
Yes. That is correct. And then the Ten is the complete, the highest level of attainment in that suit. Like if it's the Ten of Swords, which curiously enough shows the guy laying on the ground with 10 swords in his back, you think, well, whoa, I don't think I want to go there. That has to do with that old societal script about total power corrupts totally. It doesn't have to. It really doesn't. And then the Ten of Wands also shows the guy burdened under carrying 10 wands. That goes right back to the Spanish Inquisition stuff. That it's like in those times, like, the whole issue was if you knew too much, you were at risk. Or how about you all know, understand the idea of the bleeding deacon?
No.
Mm-mm.
Or then if you don't know that one, how about the if you just say a politician who seems to know everything and is puffed up, doesn't have to be a politician, but anybody who professes to know it all and then holds that over other people. That's why that Ten of Wands got that signature, but of course that would be in reverse mode. But the Ten of Wands means to have a tremendous amount of knowledge and be skillful in the use of it and handle it well. Ten of Discs is when you've got your home, your cars, your family, it all works really well. You're very happy with it. These are great cards to use when you're doing spell work because you say, yeah, I think I would like to just have the Ten of Discs, please. And then the page is anything new that's just starting out. Because, and that's why it represents people that are young, too. Any young endeavor, new endeavor, something you want to attempt, a new idea, a new feeling. Puppy love. How about that? Page of Cups. Puppy love. The Knight is idealistic and aggressive. The high-charging aspirant. A lot of energy there. But not a whole lot of maturity necessarily. Like, you know, the Seekers of the Holy Grail, like the Knight of Cups in your deck is actually taken right from the Seekers of the Holy Grail. You know? And it's great. It's a wonderful thing to do. But, you know, people spent their whole lives looking for the Holy Grail. Never found it. Not knowing it was a feeling inside. An aspiration inside. You didn't have to find the physical cup. What did they call it in one of the movies? Jesus' juice cup? That, by the way, was from Fisher King, in case you want to know where I got that.
That's good.
So, the Queen, aside from being obviously anything relating to a mature female and so forth, is also anything that is sort of being nourished, sustained, growing, benevolent, mature, but not necessarily complete. It would be the part of age, for instance, that would be the prime of life type of age, say. Whereas the King would be like older age. If it wasn't just referring to a person. Or any project or thing you were doing that had reached fruition, but not, you know, it's still growing. It's still being nourished. It's still getting larger and so forth. It's on the incline, not the decline. The King being completed projects, things, people, and so forth, mature to old age. Does not mean necessarily it's going out, but it could be. Or declining. But it's that later completed time to rest sort of thing. Unless you're talking about it in a reading as a person. But it can be, the court cards can be people or principles, either one. We differentiate by how alive they look and how they speak to us. And then the Ace, which is the top of the suit, is the total energy of that suit. It's like the total condition of all the cards in that suit. and the total use of that. So like, for instance, the Ace of Discs, doesn't always, but it can refer to your total physical health. And the Ace of Cups can refer to your total, either the total understanding of emotions or the total emotions involved in something, everybody's emotions that were displayed in this event, or a real sort of overall ability to comprehend those and work with them. So, and these are very general pictures. You've got in eight, you've got possible situation signifiers that we'll be going over perhaps next class. You can look at them. But you've got meanings for every single card in your notes. This was just to sort of give you an idea of how to think about these, so you don't have to think you've got to memorize every card right out off the bat. And as we said, in willingness is the day greeting, day ending, and exit ritual. Questions or comments? Other than that, I'm sorry we went a little over.
That's okay. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
For a second, I was getting curious about whether the numbers match the Enneagram numbers. And sometimes it looked like they did, and then sometimes they didn't.
Yeah, they don't really.
Yeah.
Different system. Even though the 9 does.
Yeah, and the 7 felt like an Enneagram too.
Oh, because there was, let's see, 7 was achievement, right.
Yeah, and pleasure and addiction stuff.
Yeah, but it is actually a somewhat different system.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys, so get your decks keyed and shuffled, so next week we'll start talking about actual readings and doing actual readings. And then you'll have the beginning of a fabulous tool of introspect and divination. And you'll be amazed, even though you think you don't know what you're doing, you sit down and you do a reading on someone, you're going to be amazed at what it shows. Just even with the little that you do know.
Now, Alan, you can't do readings on yourself, right?
Who says?
I don't. Well, I was just asking.
Oh, you said you can't.
For some reason, I thought you said once you can't do readings on yourself.
Oh, no, absolutely you can. It's not the easiest thing to do.
Mm.
It's much easier to do a reading on somebody else.
Okay.
Because you're so much clearer. You know, it's because when we're doing it for ourselves, we have too many voices inside. Oh, that can't be. And really, do you think of that? Oh, I don't know. Gotcha.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or no, not that card.
Yeah, right. So, I'm going to show you guys how to do readings where you will never embarrass anyone, you will never dismay anyone. Believe it or not, what you want out of a reading is to tell a person simply what are they doing that is not giving them the results they desire. What's working for them and what is not working for them. And what things, if they shifted slightly, would really begin to alter that. So, it isn't a thing about, as you would think it is, when you listen to other people's readings, oh my God, look at that, you've got a tower reversed and your whole world is going to end. No, what that's saying is you are in a time in which, yeah, there are people jumping off the earth, doing really weird endings. There's a lot of, you know, opportunities to do yourself in or to go along with the basic overall trend of change. highly demonstrative change, wouldn't you like to consider what you're doing a little more carefully? So, all readings can be very, very pleasant and very helpful. Okay, you guys, thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Alan.
Good night.
Night.
Good night.